Parshas Parshas Tetzaveh. We're told Rabbi Aaron Tendler has a series where he summarizes the contents of a parsha, and I like looking at it when there are complicated parshas with a lot of technical detail that, unless we have diagrams, it's much too hard to wrap our minds around. So he wants to tell us that Mishpatim actually has 53 mitzvos in it, and they're going to relate, obviously, very much into the notion of the concept, the reality of the Mishkan. First parsha talks about the mitzvah that we have to get the purest of olive oil to light the menorah. And it's the very first drop, it seems, of each olive. Aaron and his four sons, Samar, are designated to be the Kohanim. And Tetzaveh then goes into what type of clothing the Kohanim wore when they were involved in the service of the Beis HaMikdash. The Kohen Kedyoid, every Kohen but the Kohen Gadol, had four garments. He had a turban, a hat, a shirt, he had pants, and a belt. I don't think he wore undergarments. That's my understanding. The Kohen Gadol had a different hat because it had to be designed in a way that he could have the tzitz, the golden headplate, which said Kadosh Lashem on it. Right, and he had to have room also for his tefillin besides that on his head. He also wore a me'il, a long outer robe. Then he had the ephod, which we're told is a quilted vest. Right? He had the choshen, which is the jeweled breastplate that had the Urim v'Tumim inside it. And the tzitz, we just mentioned, the golden forehead plate. It says the quilted vest, the ephod, is described. And it had two shoham stones, two stones of shoham, upon which were engraved the names of the 12 Shvatim, six on one, six on the other. And these were set on the shoulders of the Kohen Gadol. We're then told that there had to be cloth fittings for the Shoham stones. And this same type of enclosure was designed for the Choshen, right? The breastplate. It says the method that in which we had to fasten the breastplate to the vest is explained. And we know that the breastplate, or the Choshen, had the names of the Shvatim. It also had Avram Yitzchak V'Yaktov, and it also had, I think, either Shiftei Ka or Shiftei Yeshurun. And in having those words with an equal number of letters on each of the stones, there were 12 stones, things would they would have, it would light up when a question was asked by the king, probably by Basedin, and it says those who the congregation needed. And that's, I don't know who that meant, but that's the other thing it says, who they could use it for. Some of the names of a shevet, like Dun, which is two letters, would have letters from the names of the avos, or from the shiftei, right? The add-ons. And in that way, they would have an equal number of letters on each stone. And so you would not see Avraham's name spelled out. You could see it. You would see Aleph Beis on one stone. And you might have Resh Hey Mem on the other. And that's the way they were broken up, the other names, to fill the number of acquired words on a stone. We're then told about the long outer robe. We're told that the hem of this garment had small bells. They had bells inside pomegranate covered or colored items, and it would ring when the Kohen Gadol walked through the Beis HaMikdash. We're told that one of the reasons this was, so that when the, right? I'm sorry. It says it's a metaphor for the way people, and say especially a husband, should go into their house. They shouldn't walk in unannounced. They should knock. They should say, I'm home, something like that. Just don't walk into a room. Because for whatever reason, the Kohen Gadol announced his presence. We get details about how the tzitz, the golden forehead, and the Kohen Gadol's special hat were to be made. And we're told that every one of the type of garments made had to be made from the finest of white linen. The Kohen Gadol's special clothing had a special thread in it that was spun from five different colored threads, including a gold, pure gold thread. That takes us to the end of Shlishi. Revi'i, Chamishi, and Shishi describe the Shivas Yemei Hamluim, the seven-day ceremony which was consecrated, which was Mekadesh the Kohanim into their job, along with the way they consecrated the altar, the outer altar. To this point in the Chumash, all of the internal vessels of the Mishkan have been described, but for one. And she turns to the Mizbeach inside the Ohel, the one on which the Ketores was brought daily. And we're told that this offering and the daily preparation of the lighting of the menorah could only be done by the Kohen Gadol. We're told that the Ketores had a special mixture of incense, and it could only be formulated for that purpose. And he quotes, there was a famous biblical archaeologist, Wendell Jones, who said he found the hidden cache containing 600 kilos of Ketores that was buried before the first base of Migdash had been destroyed. So again, we can see we're getting a parsha with many technical details. We're told that the big day kahuna were supposed to be for splendor, chavodel tiferes, honor and splendor. Rav Elia Meir Bloch makes an interesting observation. The pasuk says you should make big day kuna, garments for Aaron, your brother, lechavodel tiferes, for glory and splendor. Another pasuk says, and for the sons of Aaron, you should make tunics and make sashes, he says, and you should make headdresses for glory and splendor. My friend looks at this and says, the special garments that the Kohanim wore were beautiful. They were like royal garb. And it wasn't just to be functional to help in what the tasks were. It was to set up a spirit of reverence, glory and splendor. Rav Elia Meir Bloch points out, he says, there may be a contradiction. The pasuk after the first pasuk says, you should speak to all the wise-hearted people in whom HaKadosh Baruch Hu said he invested wisdom, that they should make the clothing for Aaron to sanctify him to minister to me. So Rav Elia Meir Bloch says, initially HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, they should be made, right, for glory and splendor. But somehow the emphasis on functionality is given now, when talking to the artisans who are going to make them. Rav Elia Meir Bloch says that each of the vessels constructed for the Mishkan had enormous metaphysical kaychais, powers. They did great things in Shemayim. The purpose of the avoda in the temple and all of its symbolism and meticulous detail was so that the lower world here will have effect on the higher world. And he says, the priestly garments, right, is that they too, when used in the service in the Beis HaMikdash, somehow these garments too would instill sanctity. The garments had to be made the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, because that was the only way they would work to accomplish their divine mission. Technically, right, we're told they didn't have to be the most beautiful. They could have been, and my friend says, akin to overalls or the work uniforms that we see common today. Except that people are human, and when we see people wearing work clothes, especially manual labor, right, it can have an effect on the people seeing it. He says, take the example of the 9 Supreme Court justices. Unlike Zelensky and unlike Elon Musk, they wear dignified clothes. They don't wear jeans. They wear their black robes. And they sit in a respectful area. And he says, the spectacle of the robes and the chairs heighten the respect that people can have, and they can comprehend that this is the highest court in the USA. And he says, when you take a poll and you ask people, you find out that yes, it does have an effect, that somehow people feel majesty. He says, with the Kohanim, he said, in terms of accomplishing an efficient avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, beauty wasn't needed. But he said, if you want to inspire Kohanim that they are doing something extra special, right, it's important to dress up for the occasion. That's why the clothing need a measure of glory and splendor. And he says, regarding giving orders to the craftsmen to make them, we had to be told how functional they had to be and what was required. And give them information also about the spiritual effect that these garments were to have. The spiritual effect, he says, that's the wording lekadsho lekani, to sanctify the Kohen and to minister unto me. Beauty, he says, was for the nation. The people had to be inspired. But there had to be a second element. You needed to inspire the wearers to know that they were doing God's ministry. The Gemara tells a story in Shabbos that a goy walked behind a shul and heard, it says, Parshas Tetzaveh, and I guess he understood Hebrew because he asked one of the Jews, who wears these gorgeous clothes? And they said, we were reading about the Kohanim and the Kohen Gadol. And the guy says, self, let me convert and become a Kohen Gadol. He went to Shammai and he said, I heard about these tremendous clothing and it got him. He said, it's something I yearn for. I want to convert. And we're told that Shammai, who, my friend said, was well known not to suffer fools gladly, you know, knowing that no ger could ever become a Kohen Gadol, even a Yisroel can't, he basically sent the guy away. The individual then came to Hillel, and Hillel told the goy, if your desire is truly to become a Kohen Gadol, you've got to learn the rules of the Mishkan, its kelim, the roles of the Kohanim and what they wear. And only when you armed with this knowledge can you come back and start to talk about it. And this made sense. Like, I can't become a doctor until I go to medical school. It says, the Goy began to study the laws of the Mikdash, and when he came to the Pasuk, Hazor HaKorev Yumas, if a non-Kohen, a Zor, a stranger, so to speak, wants to do the Avoda, and that truck comes near to do certain, he's Chayiv Misa, he's got to be put to death. The Goy came to Shammai, and he said, could you explain to me, who is this, quote, Zor, the stranger? And David HaMelech said, let me explain to you who it could be. David HaMelech, the father of the internal kingdom of Klal Yisroel, had he done the Avoda, would have been killed. The Goy realized that obviously there was no way he could become a Goyim Gadol. And it seems that he was so struck by the way Hillel taught him and brought him along that he became a ger. Later, years later, it says he came to Shammai and he said, I want to tell you something. When I came to you and you shoved me off, I would, with that encounter, I was totally turned off. I wasn't going to become a yid, whatever. However, I was lucky enough to come under the auspices of Hillel. Hillel treated me friendly. He had patience, and he brought me along bit by bit. In so doing, I developed a proper appreciation for Yiddishkeit. That is the only reason why I am now a Yid. Okay, we're gonna There's a little. My friend goes on with some more on this vort, and I will pick up with it tomorrow because the rabbi's here and he's gonna start his shiur in a minute or so. So have a really amazing day, and thank you, Zeigesund.